I've spent a lot more time and a lot more passion and interest being involved at the university. It started by me sending some emails and telephone calls to the present members of the Board of Regents, and I didn't get any responses. Nobody answered me, so I thought I'd better go to some meetings to see what the problem was, why people didn't stay in touch. So I started going to Board of Regents meetings a couple years ago, and I've gone to probably 6 or 8 two-day meetings. I've gone to a number of committee meetings, and I've got a pretty good feel for what goes on with the board. I've also gotten to know a couple of the members pretty well, and I think very highly of the work that a couple of them do. When I got to the board, I found out how wrong I was about what the board did. It's pretty clear, I'm sure you all realize this, but I didn't at the outset, that the board doesn't do the administration. The board appoints the president, monitors his work, monitors the budget. They've got a lot of fiscal responsibility, but they don't run the university. I've had a number of people urging me to be a participant in this activity, but many of them, I'm afraid, think that once you're a regent, that you start running the university. That's not my understanding at all. The governance is there, the policy is there at the board level, but the president runs the university. Over the past few days, with what's gone on with athletics, I've had my phones rung off the hook, but I keep telling each person I talk to that it's not a matter of what the Board of Regents is going to do about that. I'm referring to the firing of the football coach. That's done. What would I bring to the board? I think I would bring to the board what I find lacking in the meetings that I've gone to. Transparency, serious lack in my judgment. I think I'm an authentic person. I'm comfortable in boardrooms or on the street. If any of you, and I assume some of you, have read the essay questions, I'm a recovering addict, have been for many, many, many years, and I understand the toughest, hardest level of poverty and addiction, and I think that's an asset. I think I would bring vision, which I believe is lacking in some quarters on the board. Definitely fiscal responsibility. I feel very strongly about that. I was in business for 25 years on my own with our car dealerships, had nobody to answer to except myself, and when the buck stopped, it stopped with me. I learned a lot about fiscal responsibility, and I think I could repair the disconnect that exists between the public and the university. I think that in the legislature, who represents the public, and in people I talk to on the street, there's an amazing disconnect from what the public believes and what the people on the board think the public believes. I believe in the legislature there's a feeling that the university has become elitist, and I would hate to see that happen. I think that the course, the vision, the direction that the university goes as far as planning for the future, establishing or reestablishing what a great institution this is just so key to the state of Minnesota. If we look at the rankings, and by the way, on each of these topics that I mentioned, transparency, authenticity, vision, fiscal responsibility, and repairing the disconnect, I've got numerous specific examples that I'd be happy to share when time permits. But as far as looking at how these change, that comes back to vision, and I don't think it can be done without a plan. There's a strategic long-range plan that was written 5 years ago, and it's not being used to run the university. That's pretty scary. They refer to it, but it's not been updated. There's nothing about research in it. There's nothing about borrowing in it, and there's nothing about athletics in it. So to me, that's not a very powerful long-range plan. And yet, if you look at the 4 items that the Board of Regents has set out as their priorities, they twice refer to the long-range strategic plan as part of their goals. There's a disconnect right there, too. So I think I can be helpful. I've run a business for a long time. I had some success and some failure. In my professional athletic career, I had some success, some failure. I'm familiar with both. I was booed in front of 65,000 people, so I don't think being booed at the Board of Regents would be a difficult process for me. I know what that feels like. But I would like the opportunity. I'm happy to be here to chat with you about it. I think it's important. I have a passion for the U, as I mentioned, and I'd like to be involved with it. So thank you for giving me the time for those comments.
Thank you very much. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carter, and you touched on some of this in your opening comments. My question is, what do you see as the single most significant challenge facing the University of Minnesota today?
It would be hard to define a single most, but there certainly are a couple at the top. The fiscal responsibility, the way money is being spent without, in my view, without proper restraint. There was budget for the University of Minnesota was an 82-page document that was passed at the December board meeting. I was there. There were no questions asked about that document. $3.7 billion budget, and nobody asked a question. To me, that's a big, big issue. And I would say, number one, how the money is spent and where it goes.
Thank you.
Harriet.
Sure. I have a two-part question. I want to make sure that I heard what you said correctly. You said that you have a lot of respect and support for two of the board members or a couple of the board members mm-hmm. today. If you were appointed as a regent, how would you work with the other part of the group if I'm understanding that you don't have respect for them?
It's not a matter that I don't respect the others. I have a great deal of respect for two or three of the folks that I've gotten involved with. Again, I don't know if you read my essay questions, but I mentioned it in there. I've been on a number of boards, both profit and nonprofit. One in particular was an organization in Wisconsin that we had the same issue that I think is present on the Board of Regents here at the university. There's a number of people that are not engaged. This is a serious, serious board to be on, and it takes an awful lot of time. Quite frankly, if I was still working, I don't think I'd have the time to do this job. There's a number of people that I've observed at the board meetings that are disengaged. They're not up to par, up to speed. They don't appear to be working hard at it. I think that they need to be re-engaged, and I think that people can help them do that, to see that there's a lot to do that's not being done. It doesn't need to be pounded over the head or yelled at or anything like that. It's just encouragement. I've done it before on boards, and I think if a person's going to sit on a board, they ought to do the work.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bert.
Jim, I was in charge of checking your references and probably talked to five or six people. None of them talked much about your football career, and as a matter of fact, two of them volunteered to me that Jim doesn't talk much about his football career. They want to talk about your business career, and that was the context in which they knew you. Now, this morning, we interviewed two potential regents who come from big businesses in the state, and they have a certain perspective which is valuable. You obviously come from a small business perspective, and I'd just like you to talk for a minute about your business, the where and the what. You're in business for 25 years. And most importantly, what you have picked up from being in a small business that you think would be of value on the Board of Regents?
Great question. I ran a small business, but it wasn't very small. We had when I sold my business about, I don't know how many years ago it's been now, in the early 2000s, we had 350 people working for us. I was in the automotive business. My dad and my brother were here in the Twin Cities, which some of you know them. I started in Wisconsin after my football career was over, knew nothing about it, got knocked around, almost went broke, and hung in there, and things started to get a little bit better, and we ended up building a big organization. The thing that I learned most, whether it's General Mills or Jim Carter Ford or whatever, is that it's a people business. I don't care what you're selling, I don't care what you're buying, and it's the same at the Board of Regents. It's a people and connection business. Right now, what's happened with the Fairview situation and Children's Hospital, that's about relationships. Those things get done by people talking to people. It's not all X's and O's, excuse the locker room referral. It's not all dollars and cents. It's people and it's relationships. And I learned that time and time again in my business. I mentioned I had some failures. I bought some businesses that didn't work out. I did it for the wrong reasons, ego at times rather than the chance to be profitable. We helped a lot of people in our business, and a lot of us made money. I didn't make, that might be the reasons they didn't want to talk about my football career, by the way. It wasn't very good. Maybe the business thing worked out being a little better. But we did make some money. My exit strategy was excellent. I figured out how to sell the business. I learned a lot. I am a lifetime learner. I believe in that in business or sitting on boards. It's the most fun I have. And I learned it in that business, in the car business. The car business is unusual in that it's, as most of you know, that the expression used car salesman is not very favorable, and most people look on that profession with some disdain. But I met some great people in the business. We developed some great people. And I'm very proud of what we did in the car business. The fellow I sold the business to started with me as a cleanup guy in the service department. He now is the does $200 million in sales and makes a lot of money and helps a lot of people. He's got 500 people working for him. And I'm very, very proud of what he's done, too. So I hope I didn't dance around too much. I hope I answered your question.
Theo.
Hi, I'm going to transition towards more of the campus climate now. As I'm sure you know, as anybody who follows the University of Minnesota community knows, there's been a lot of issues with speech on campus, freedom of speech, and academic expression. What place do those ideas have at the University of Minnesota, and how would you encourage or discourage them as a regent?
I would very much encourage them. I was at a board meeting, I believe it was in October, it might have been December, Board of Regents meeting, and there was a peaceful protest. There were about 30 people that came. It wasn't reported in the press, which I found interesting. All the mics were turned off in the room, which I found interesting. President Kaler left the room, which I found interesting. A number of the regents left the room during the demonstration. It was a well-organized, very respectful, demonstration of people that were unhappy with the administration at the university. They threw some confetti up in the air, so whoever had to clean the room had a little more work to do, but it was very well done. And I was very disappointed that the president and a number of the board members didn't stay for it. I think that, of course, I'm a child of the 60s. I go way, way back, and that's what the 60s were about. We protested. I can't say I did. That's an editorial eye. I was more concerned, I guess, with other things. But the 60s, you know, the music, the protest, that, I believe that's a lot of what this country was built on. I believe in it very strongly.
Thank you. Margaret.
Yes. I'm going to segue to a topic you probably know is going to come up. But in the December 17th issue of the Star Tribune, when the football players were boycotting, your comments were, I think it took a lot of courage. I texted a lot of those kids. I think they did the right thing. I would have stood with them. So my question to you is two-part. Have you read the 82-page university EOAA report, not the police report?
Understand.
And what would you text to those players today, or have you already texted them since you read the report?
Great question. Thank you for that. I would not change anything at all about what I did in the way of supporting the team. I had not read the report at that time. I read the report. I would agree, at least by your tone, that it's very painful to read. However, I believe what the players boycotted for and wanted to walk out for was transparency and fairness, and I would again support them for that. It in no way, either in my person or any of those kids, in my view, it in no way signifies condoning sexual assault, sexual abuse, anything like that. It was for fairness and transparency. It's not germane to this particular conversation, but I would certainly entertain and be happy to discuss with you either personally or as a board how I think that whole situation could have been and should have been handled. I don't think it was handled correctly from the top, but to directly answer your question, I hope I have.
Can I follow that up?
Certainly.
Can we have a brief explanation of how you would have handled that situation?
If you feel like it's appropriate for this discussion, when this event happened in September, four or five people, kids, team players at that time should have been kicked out of school immediately for what they did from the police report. That would have solved everything. There may or may not have been an EOAA report. You know, there's the Aurora, there might have been, there's so many different organizations on campus. Some of you know the SSMS, the OSCAI, the Athletes Handbook. There's so many different organizations that are involved in things like this, and I'm not minimizing it, but if the people in charge would have dismissed those four or five players immediately, which they should have in my view, I would have, then this would not be what it's become today.
Crossed.
Yes, Margaret.
10 players are listed in the 82-page report, and there were far more than four players that were in, you know, the four you're talking about. Have you read that 82-page report?
I have.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Gary.
Just a follow-up on that, Mr. Bird. What do you, so I understand what you did as a layperson and your comments in the paper and your subsequent tweets, but assume you're a regent. What do you believe the role of a regent is with regard to this situation?
Excellent question. If I were a regent today, I would not be making a comment to the press as I did, even though privately I'm still a Gopher. And those kids are here. We told their parents we would protect them and take care of them, even the ones who misbehave and act badly and break the law. So I do feel a loyalty, but as a regent, I wouldn't speak to it. The regents don't, only the chair of the Board of Regents speaks for the board, and the president speaks for the university. Members of the Board of Regents can speak for themselves, but I think that the tradition has been, and it presently, and I would honor that, not to speak to issues like that, because the regents didn't make the decision on what happened. The athletic director and the president made those decisions, and maybe the coach.
Other questions? Anybody? We're all thinking.
I got a question. I should have asked it earlier. I think there's a diversity piece and maybe an issue, and I think it's something that needs to be addressed with the Board of Regents, and I think it came up earlier, but if you had an opportunity, how would you address diversity?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, Daryl, how you mean that. I can speak to my experience with diversity, both gender, race. I'm an old, overweight white guy to start with. That may make me in a minority in some of these activities. When I came to the University of Minnesota, I had never met a black guy in person. The first weekend I was there, I took teammates, and they still talk about it, from Memphis and Newport News, Virginia, home with me to our home. A few years later, I was the only white guy on the defense of the Green Bay Packers. There were 10 black guys and me, and they elected me captain. I think my relationship with minorities, again, with people on the street that suffer from addiction and mental disease, is excellent. I think my relationship, in great part, I might add, thanks to my wife, my relationship with women, with gender issues, are much, much improved in the 25 years I've spent with my wife. I've learned a lot. She is a hippie from way back and a liberal. I'm much more conservative than she is, but I've learned a lot from her, and I thank her almost every day for that. As far as gender and diversity issues, further than that, I don't think it's as much a question of diversity as I do commonality. I think that that's the important thing for all of us. I'm not trying to be too heavy about it, but I do happen to believe that as long as people have intelligent, thoughtful things to say, I should listen, think about it. If they can change my mind, great. If it doesn't, move on. I think that's the best approach.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I just hitchhike for a moment on what Mr. Carter said about diversity? In checking his references, I talked to a gentleman who knew him way back when in his football days, and I said, well, tell me about Mr. Carter's views on diversity. What do you know? And he said, hey, look, any guy who spent 10 years in the NFL and in NFL locker rooms embraces diversity. So there you are.
Jerry?
Well, maybe a little bit different note, though. We've been talking about the controversy currently. But over the last few years, the university has had multiple controversies. One of them, on a get your comments about our academic health center. Actually, I'm a graduate of the medical school. Going back lots of years ago, at the time you were there, in fact, the impression was that this is one of the top institutions in the country. And there's lots of perception, including printed reports, that they do not have the same standing. I appreciate your comments about that standing or what things need to happen to improve the standing.
Another good question. Thank you. I don't think there's any doubt that that we have gone downhill. If you look at the ratings, like them or not, the Wall Street Journal ranked the University of Minnesota 110th in the country last summer. That's by responses from graduates. The medical school is ranked 35th in the country. The law school is ranked 22nd. All those numbers were single digits 10 or 12, 15 years ago. So something's wrong. We're going in the wrong direction. There are 330,000 people in this state, and I'm one of them, that are over, there's 330,000 people over the age of 75. I'm not one of them quite yet. There are 779,000 people over the age of 65. I'm one of them. The University of Minnesota Medical School has no geriatrics training. You hear a lot said about the land grant mission of this university. What that really means, and again, I hope I'm not being redundant, I'm sure you understand this, it means taking care of the people in Minnesota. That's what we're supposed to do. If we've got 779,000 people over the age of 65 and we're not training any geriatric doctors, there's 50 geriatric doctors in the state of Minnesota. That's all. The dental school presently is losing $1 million a year. They've got a very, very busy and vibrant clinic on the West Bank that takes care of people with bleeding issues, with mental health issues, with poverty issues. The powers that be have decided to close that clinic because they're losing $1 million a year, and nobody can explain where the $1 million is being lost in the dental school, but they're deciding to close the clinic. I don't think that's very good judgment. So I'm with you on the issues that are happening. I had a really nice conversation with a gentleman who was a longtime dean at the biomedical school at the university the other day. He believes that the tragic incidences over the decades, starting with the Nigerian issues and then the Markeson things, has caused a drain on talent and loyalty in the medical school and at the university. That's his view of the world. I'm not in there teaching or instructing, so I have to trust his judgment. I think that's probably part of it.
Excuse me.
So, okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Just adding on to that. So do you have a proposed solution to those issues?
Well, sitting here today before I'm involved, I don't. But I know enough that I can learn and listen and hear and dig into the numbers to find out what the correct solutions could be. We know one thing, that it's all about people. You got to have better people. Otherwise, we don't go down, down, down in the rankings.
Just to follow on to your comment, I just want you to know that, yes, what you say is correct about the geriatric practice, but we did last year put the legislature appropriated money to fund two positions.
Good.
It was very small, but I'm just telling you. We did take some action.
Good. Chuck.
Mr. Carter, there's two large systems in the state, the university system and the Minsky system. How do you feel that they currently cooperate to better enhance the educational opportunities for the students? And what are your thoughts about improvement in the future?
That, too, is a good question. And I don't have a very good answer other than the information I can glean from my friends that are on the Board of Regents presently. There's a lot of teasing back and forth about who should take over who when they get together and have a dinner. I'm glad to hear they are getting together at least once a year to talk. As you probably know, in Wisconsin, it is combined. It's all one system, different than it is here in Minnesota. But specifically for that question, I don't know how the combination should work. I'm not entrenched enough yet to know. I do know that with the five campuses that the university operates in, that it's a very vibrant, important part of the community. As you look at Morris or Crookston, I know the mayors in both those towns, and I've talked with them about the relationship that they have with the university, how important it is when the students come back in the fall. At Crookston, of course, with the big online presence of like 1,000 students out of the 1,900 there do it online. At the UMD in Duluth, the track, the way to get small town doctors out in the community has been very, very successful at UMD, is a wonderful thing. The mayor would tell us a lot more about Rochester, or I could talk to Mike Sherrill maybe about that, but just those kind of things are important in those communities, and I'm sure they feel the same way at Minnesota State with the communities they're in. I talked a little bit, and I'm sorry, I don't have an answer of how those could or should be combined or not.
Thank you. Margaret?
Mr. Carter, I'm going to take the same privilege that Senator Bonoff had and explain something to you about the October Regents meeting where there was a protest. I was there as well. It's standard operating procedure that the president leave a room, the regents leave a room, and they turn the microphones off. But it leads me to my question, because I too have attended the regents meetings, and the thing that concerns me a great deal is what's governance and what's micromanaging, and even what I have coined as tactical tinkering. And so a question to you, and it's on your answer to question 4. You say you have the courage to pull the trigger when necessary as a member of the Board of Regents. What were you referring to?
All things. I think that when something is on the table and it's clear that a decision needs to be made and people need to get to it and do it rather than taking more time, tabling things, and letting things fester and get worse. That's what I was referring to.
Okay. Harriet.
Thinking about the next 6 years and potentially even the following 6, what would you want your legacy to be if you were selected to move forward in the process and became a regent?
Interesting question. Again, I'm not exactly sure what that will mean other than what I said at the outset. I would like to be remembered not just as a regent, but in life, as being a transparent person. I believe very strongly in being honest. I wasn't always in my life, but in my 34 years of recovery, that is the most important thing to me, to tell the truth. I think that if I left the board in 6 years, if I was chosen to be on the board, I think that I would feel good about the fact that we had a long-term strategic plan in place and being used to guide the university. And I think that when I left the university, that position, if we had relationships with hospitals, with Minnesota State, with legislators, with the person on the street that wonders what in the hell is going on, I think that would be a good legacy to leave behind, that I was transparent, I answered questions, I picked up the phone, I answered my emails when people had questions. I think that would be a good thing.
Thank you. Lois.
Mr. Carter, one can hear and see in your words and in your voice that you would like to see some change happening at the university. And you're not alone. You know, you have stated, I know I'm not alone, from what people have said to me. And so my question is, irrespective of whether the change you would like to see happen or not is deemed by anyone in this room or any room to be the appropriate path to take, how, as a new board member in what is to be a collegial but honest and transparent and truthful environment, would you seek to approach putting on the table for discussion the points of change that you feel are critical for this state and this institution?
Well said. I think I would do it the way I've done it with other boards. I'm very probative. I dig. I'm what we used to call in the sports field as a grinder. I just don't give up. I just keep digging and digging and digging. And as I also mentioned earlier, I like to learn and I like to get answers to questions. So I would dig and dig and dig. And by the way, I think that it's a shame right now that the university Board of Regents can't get all the information they need to make decisions. I don't know why that is, but it's a frustration on the board. I see it at the meetings, and that needs some digging into, so that a person that is responsible for the fiscal condition of the university can get all the information that he or she needs to make decisions. So I would dig first, and then I would present, and then I would hope to persuade. And in a civil society, that's the only way we can do things. And the board meetings are civil, maybe too quiet at times in my view, but there are procedures and I appreciate that, but it can be done. But I do, what you said at the outset, I truly do believe that change is necessary. It's necessary for all of us.
Good. Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carter, can I presume that both you and Mr. Thompson are members of the Hall of Fame, Football Hall of Fame? Are you both in that?
Oh, you're very kind. Daryl is. I just snuck in recently, but thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, congratulations to both of you. You referenced there are 17 folks, including yourself, that we're interviewing. Three of them are well known to the current regions because they are incumbents. The other 14 are, I would guess, by and large, unknown to the, with the exception of, I think you're well known to the Board of Regents and the administration. You referred to two or three current board members who you have the highest respect for. Let's take that group. Then Harry referred to the rest of them, the 9 or 10, that would be at least a working majority. And then the administration. How will each of those three groups react to your being elevated and become a board member?
Well, that would be difficult for me to say. It would be probably hearsay. I have an opinion, if you'd like my opinion on how those people would react. Mm-hmm. I don't think the administration would be very pleased. I've disagreed with President Kaler on a number of things, where I think we're friends. I see him, we speak, we chat, we have the same tailor. Mine's a little more updated, but other than that. Michael Hsu, who is the latest member of the board, Darren Rocha, Tom Anderson, Abdul Omari, are the people that I see most engaged when I go to the meetings. When I go to the committee meetings, I see the same. As I mentioned earlier, I respect all that are on the board. Because I disagree or don't like the way someone does something doesn't mean I don't have respect for them. I was that way. I learned that early on from my dad. I disagreed with a lot he said, but I respected him many times for sure. I think there's some people that have been on the board for a long time that have lost interest. It appears that way at the meetings. I could be wrong. They didn't return my phone calls, didn't return my emails, so I can't discuss it with them. I don't know. I don't recall exactly whom, maybe Daryl, talked about diversity. I think the diversity on the board, from what I hear, is important. I see certain people on the board speak to the same issue all the time, say very little about other issues, but that's okay if they're engaged. As far as the staff goes, I don't have any connection or way to know whether they would. I they get damn tired of me asking questions, I'm sure of that, because I need to know a lot more if I get on there. So they might not like it either, but is that generally answer the question?
And very keen.
Thank you.
Jim, you're the one that I was asked about going door to door.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My standard question is, do you have a relationship with your current state senator, your current state representative, and other legislators?
Well,
is that something that you think is part of both this process and then being a region?
Definitely. Some of the folks in the room, I've already had the opportunity to meet. Of course, Karen Housley's husband, Phil, and I were hockey players back at South St. Paul back in the day, and I've known Karen for a long time, knew her dad. And I've met a number of legislators, both on the Senate and the House, both sides of the aisle. I've done quite a bit of legwork, knowing that, I don't know if this is the correct term, but there are some politics involved in all of this, and I'm not very political at all, but I have met the people. Of course, I knew Katie Sieben very well before she decided to step away. I do a lot of work with the St. Croix River. I live over there, and Katie's been helpful. Dan Schoen the same way, so they're my the people there. So I've done some legwork. I've met some people. I don't have any, I don't believe I've known anybody in the Senate or the House very, very well long-term, but I have made acquaintances with a number.
Mr. Chair, if I might just follow up on
sure.
that. This is
yep.
Generally, this wouldn't be a question we'd ask, but you've been working at this for a while.
Yes, sir.
As we know, several candidates did in our last cycle. And in two cases, candidates who were not recommended by this body continued their candidacy. And one was successful. Do you have it's kind of like asking the question when you run against the endorsed candidate if you were in politics, but what would your view be if you were not recommended by this group? Would you say fine or would you continue your candidacy?
I don't know if either choice is probably the correct one for me. I don't think I'd say fine if I didn't get passed on by this committee. I think I'd be disappointed and wonder why. And ask the questions if it was my presentation or lack of knowledge or lack of passion or lack of interest. But no, I don't think I would pursue it any further. I've got some friends that have done this process, and it's tiring. You know, it's hard work. It's worthwhile. But, you know, we're vying for a non-paying job that takes maybe 80, maybe 100 hours a month with a place that's got a lot of issues, a lot of problems. Read the papers. So it's kind of funny that we try so hard to get on something. You know, quite frankly, I must tell you, the question that I'm most often asked, and it's kind of funny, but it's sad. The most often question I've been asked by senators and members of the House is, why in the hell would you want to be a regent? That's kind of sad, though. It's funny, and I laugh too, and I think Eric might have asked me that question, but it's that's too bad. It's too bad that folks feel that way. When I was a kid, at least I think I remember that it was a prestigious position, and people that I had heard of were on it. I don't know what changed or why. Maybe just life in America today is more difficult. I don't know. But it's too bad that people view it that way.
So, Eric, do you have a question besides that one?
Well, you know, I guess, I apologize for showing up late if this has already been asked, but you've been on a lot of boards, and there seems to be some talk around, you know, governance versus management. Can you talk about your role as a governance board member and how that experience might translate to being a board of regents?
Sure. We talked a little bit about that earlier, but I think it's a good point. And right at the outset, I said that the Board of Regents' responsibility is the fiscal well-being of the university, choosing the president replacing the president, that's necessary, supporting the president and the vice presidents and the athletic directors and whoever else is in place, that's part of the job of the Board of Regents. Coming up with policy, actually it says specifically in the responsibilities of the Board of Regents to have a long-range strategic plan in place. That's one of the responsibilities. So again, I say the president runs the university. That's his job. He's the CEO. We're the Board of Directors as the Board of Regents, and we're there to advise, consult, constructively criticize, but not govern, or not run the administration. That's up to the president. If the wrong people are running it, then it's up to the Board of Directors to make a change. But that's pretty much how it is.
Any other questions? If not, Jim, if you've got any closing comments you'd like to make, love to
not really. I very much appreciate it. I like the fact that you all seem interested, and it's a big job for you too. And I appreciate that. I appreciate being able to come and chat with you.
Good. Well, thanks for your willingness to put your hat in the ring on this one too.
Yes,
thanks
sir.
So much.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
And to you.
Yeah.